following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text in at 334-784-1685. The boys are bringing you all the action on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. When it comes to the Tigers, the SEC, and the hottest topics in sports, this is where you want to be.
Week one game week rolls on, and there's some bulletin board material spiraling throughout college football. It's Tuesday, and you're on the line.
Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, straight from the ESPN 106.7 studio, here's Christian Griffin and Tripp Upton.
Welcome in. It is the Tuesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and that Radio Alabama app. I'm Christian Griffin here with you in the studio. If you can't tell, feeling a little bit better here this afternoon, a little bit more energy, a little bit more excited to be able to dive into what's going to be a really, really fun show here this afternoon. Excited for yesterday as well, but it was a lot of, as I mentioned, just college football having to take over within my system to power me through, but a lot to dive into today, and ain't no time to be sick around here. We got too much going on the high school side of things, as well as with Auburn football, picking up so much to get to here this afternoon. We're getting to a lot of what we were not able to get to yesterday, and a lot of this is going to be with the text box here as well. Again, had a lot of comments throughout the weekend, throughout yesterday's show as well. And so definitely want to be able to dive into a lot of that here this afternoon. And that being week zero games as we continue to count down to week one. But to talk about those appetizers and talk about some of the biggest storylines from week zero, both inside of Auburn, outside of Auburn, indirectly towards Auburn and everything else here on this Tuesday afternoon. And then we are diving into college football drama because although, yes, there that word just circulates and is almost the dark cloud that hangs over college football right now, the word drama, it's circulating outside of just Baton Rouge now. And you feel like that's possibly a good thing, but possibly just I don't know. Maybe people are fed up. Maybe coaches are beginning to get fed up with what the offseason brought to college football, to semi-professional football this year. And so really excited to be able to dive into all of that here in hour number one, because hour number two following that is going to be a whole lot of Auburn football conversations. Myself and Tripp, we have our confidence and our concerns, our C versus C in terms of what this Auburn team is going to look like in week one. What are we confident about? What are some of the concerns for all three phases of the football? And so it's going to be a lot of fun here this afternoon, and we highly encourage you to be a part of it however you can do so here this afternoon. Again, I'm Christian Griffin with you in the studio. Across from me is my man Tripp Upton. Sir, happy Tuesday. Hopefully all is well.
Yes, happy Tuesday here. Been a busy Tuesday as well, running around, had to get my internet set up this morning. And if you know anything about having to deal with a lot of these electrical companies, not saying they're a bad thing, but when you tell me, hey, we'll be there from 8 to 10, and you get there at 9:45, and is radio silence before that, it's kind of just like, what am I doing here? But look, we're excited. We're here. We're ready to go. Got to go help set up for the graduate remote tonight. The drive will be live on location at the graduate from 4 to 6, so go to check that out on top of the at the War Eagle Supper Club on top of the Graduate Hotel in downtown Auburn. So I'd highly recommend. I think I'm going to try and make it out there today. And so that'll be really fun. But it's been a good day. Another day closer to the kickoff of the – well, we had week zero, but the kickoff of week one starts Thursday afternoon with some big games as we continue on into the Saturday where Auburn takes on Baylor.
A little bit of insight, but you're talking about the electrical or the internet companies and – how it's like, okay, we're going to get to you the very last minute. A little insight into the personal life. My favorite movie is Grown Ups. And
great movie.
Although the second is nowhere near comparable to the first. If you don't compare the two, Grown-Ups 2 is still a fantastic movie. And, gosh, who is it? That is the, he goes to fix the TV for his mom or for his mother-in-law and says we'll be there anytime from like 8 to 5. And he goes and waits till she goes to the bathroom and it's 4:59.
Yes.
And he knocks on the door and it's like, oh, sorry, you weren't here. I'll be back there tomorrow between the hours of 8 and 5. And so you saying that just brought that to my mind.
Yeah, that's effectively what I think. Luckily, they called me. It was like, hey, we're on the way, and I'm trying to figure out what the plan is, because it's not like I can sit at and do work. I don't have internet. So, or I can't, couldn't put on an Auburn game to watch as I've continued on. Now that I have internet, I'm able to get back to that tonight.
Very, very excited. Nice. We so, do have to continue that. Yes. Somebody just texted me and said bunions. So glad to know that somebody is in touch with that. It's fantastic.
It's amazing.
I can legitimately quote just about every. You could play that movie like on mute, and I would be able to give you. Not of the second one, of the first one.
Yeah.
Of every single quote from that movie. It is
great movie.
Absolutely fantastic.
It's like $10 he goes down to one knee and he's like, oh, yes. And he's on the knee. And
God, it's
fantastic movie.
So good. I have so many more that I just can't sit there and looks like you'll didn't you get the memo. That's four.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm done. I'm sorry. What a fantastic movie. Speaking of four, we are 4 days away from the start of week one college football. But as always, again, Toby Bryant. Somebody else just texted in.
Toby Bryant.
Fantastic. got Tobo Cup.
Oh, then you have the one. It's like they're eating ice cream. It's like, I want to get wasted. I want to get chocolate wasted.
It's when you have a real hankering for ice cream.
Yes.
It's fantastic. Oh, man. Well, the phone lines are open here for the entirety of today's show. If you would like to be a part of it, feel free at 334-321-1390. Anything on your mind in terms of high school football, Auburn football, college football, grown-ups, because why not?
Yeah.
The Send Medicine text box, which has already been active at 207 with grown-ups quotes flooding my lock screen right now. We'll never, ever complain about something like that. But the Send Medicine text box is always open as well at 334-784-1685, 334-784-1OTL. And the text box is always brought to you by Send Medicine, because it's Send Medicine. You get VIP medical care with direct access to your personal physician. With over 20 years of emergency room experience, Dr. Eric Sen is bringing personalized, access-driven healthcare to the Plains. You can find out more, and you can become a member today by visiting sendmedicine.com. That's sennmedicine.com. It is fantastic. It is amazing.
Amazing.
So definitely go check out President Eric whenever you get the chance here this afternoon. And we start our number one. We start today's program by diving into the week zero games, because although it was just a little bit of the appetizer, still a fantastic start to the college football season. It was a little bit more than just the I'll watch it because it's on.
Again,
some of the games obviously are. I don't think there were too many people that went out of their way to go watch USC and San Jose State.
Well, there's a lot of people in LA that didn't go out of their way and watch that game.
That is also a very, very true statement. And we talk about the drama in college football. That's part of it here this afternoon that we will play a little bit of audio for. But there were enough games to where it was, okay, I'm going to prioritize sitting on the couch, sitting on the recliner, doing whatever I need to do to watch some of these games. And so I want to be able to dive into all eight of those here this afternoon to get the show started. And it did. It got started with North Carolina and TCU, where both teams scored 10 points in the first quarter. Man, those scripted drives, those first 15, 20 plays really looked good. Both teams go down and kick three. Both teams punt. Both teams score a touchdown. And then after that, gross. Five combined points. And I say combined, all five of them were to the Tar Heels of North Carolina. A bad snap on a punt, kicked out of the end zone, turns into a safety, and then a chip shot field goal. North Carolina wins it 15-10, a game that I believe Caleb was the only one to pick North Carolina to win. I believe you were the only one that picked TCU to win, but North Carolina to cover. Again, we'll be able to talk a little bit more about those points here in just a few moments. But
do we have to?
We could talk.
Do we have to talk about the point standings right now?
I won't say your record. I'll leave you out.
No, I want you. You know, if you're going to talk about it, I want you to.
We might
be a
as well shame you now, so that way you, once week 8 or week 9 gets here and you take the lead,
there's going to be some gross Thursday night ACC games. You're just going to see 3 for 3, 3 for 3, 3 for 3, and it's like, how?
We only do Saturdays here.
Oh, you're not a okay. That's fine.
You have until Friday at the show. Friday at the start of the show to make your picks, but yeah. I'll be able to send those as well. But
you'll be making yours on the way to Huntsville to play Randolph School.
Traveling all the way up to Wyoming to play high school football because that's what we want. We want to create great high school environments, and what better way to do that? North Carolina and TCU, 15-10. Bill Belichick, despite all of the drama in Chapel Hill, maybe you just have to move outside of Chapel Hill to get a nice little win. Billy Edwards went 16-28, threw for 232 yards for the Tar Heels. You had Jeremy Payne run for 142 yards just on the ground by himself for TCU. But gosh, the Horned Frogs, and a lot of people are already throwing in the white flag, throwing in the I surrender for Jaden Craig, the TCU Horned Frog quarterback that transferred from Harvard, went 20 of 32, threw for 175 yards, but it felt like every single big-time decision that needed to be made, it just seemed like it was the incorrect decision, yeah. Whether that was deciding to throw it back across his body into the end zone and throw it behind his receiver when he probably could have kept it himself towards the near pylon and gotten the first down, if not have scored. But a game where the middle 48 minutes, it felt like, neither team really wanted to win the football game. It was more so the fact that everybody watching, that especially those that were there, won because the clock hit zeros. North Carolina wins it 15-0 to get the Bill Belichick year 2 campaign started.
Yeah, I mean, I talked about before this game about how I think that the loser of that game was going to be fired by the end of this season, and I thought it was going to be Bill Belichick. I thought that a lot of that had to do with the off the field stuff, but I think with TCU, you're staring down the barrel of a tough year where, yeah, you have Grambling and Arkansas State to save face, but you got to go to UCF. You got BYU.
And I forgot Alonzo Barnett is the quarterback at UCF.
Oh, yeah. I forgot that, too. You have at Baylor, depending on how they look. I mean, West Virginia, Kansas, Arizona, Kansas State, Utah, Texas Tech.
You're staring down the barrel of 0-4. At the best, or I guess at the worst, but like there is a legitimate possibility 0-4 ends your season. At Arizona, home for Kansas State, home for Utah, and then at Texas Tech.
I mean, yeah, and given the fact that you're basically with, if I think that is true, that 0-4 end plus BYU, even though it's at home, it's in Fort Worth, but that plus this game, you're looking at 6-6. Is that enough in a weaker Big 12 where it's not like where they won the Big 12 in 2022 or when Max Duggan, or I guess they didn't win the Big 12, they got to the Big 12 championship in the college football playoff, mm-hmm. but Texas was still in the division. Oklahoma was still in the division. You're meaning to tell me that the two biggest programs leave and you still can't get above 6-6? That's concerning if you're TCU, and I think that they're going to be looking for a new head coach in Fort Worth after this season.
Very much so, especially again with bringing in the new offensive coordinator that really wanted to dominate under center and bringing back the old school style of football. And when you're looking at the run totals, they ran the ball 39 times for 106 yards. Obviously, again, the 31-yard loss in terms of the sack that went down as a team rush doesn't truly tell the entire story. But when you're looking at Jeremy Payne averaging 5.5 a pop, 25 carries, 142 yards, if your running back, if your bell cow is able to put that on the table, as well as Jaden Craig, your quarterback, I know that was negative 22 yards after getting sacked, but if your bell cow gets 142 yards on the ground and you only allow 15 points, I tell you that TCU walks with a victory and a trophy in one hand and a Guinness in the other, working their way back to the United States. Otherwise, I wouldn't have believed you, but Billy Edwards Jr. able to get the job done. Again, avoided the big mistake and honestly allowed TCU to make enough mistakes to where, again, the clock was able to hit quadruple zeros in the fourth quarter and North Carolina was able to walk away with a victory.
I mean, you look at Jeremy Payne is currently the college football rushing leader right now. Think about that for a second. He had the most he's the most rushing yards in the country right now. Looking at some of the rushing leaders from across the only two other guys got above 100 in Osume Kroma for Florida State and Bo Prabula for Virginia. And we'll talk about that game as well. But I just worry about what this receiver room is going to look like for TCU, what this quarterback situation is going to look like for TCU when you clearly saw the jump in competition from the Ivy Leagues to the big leagues. Really concerned this TCU offense.
Yeah, and again, a gross, a wet, a rainy game that you feel like it always is. And it kicked off college football just the way that it has over the last handful of years. It was not a pretty game. Everybody sat there and 10-10 at the end of the first, and it was like, okay, when is the gross factor going to work its way into fruition? And, well, you saw that quarters two, quarters three, and quarter four. You mentioned another guy who had more than 100 yards rushing, the quarterback for Virginia. And I do want to apologize for misspeaking. Last year was not a conference game. This was a conference game between Virginia and NC State.
Golly.
And Bo Prabula threw the ball three times at halftime. He had thrown the ball three times. And the NC State head coach and the NC State defensive coordinator said, you know, the quarterback run just kind of fooled us. We weren't really expecting Bo Prabula to use his legs the way that he did.
Which he...
Huh?
Yeah, he had 30... Up until this point in his college football career of playing, he had 56 carries in 2023, 38 carries in 2024, moving to Missouri and 95 carries last year. I mean, you look at it, you had 189 carries for 868 yards. You're meaning to tell me you didn't know he could run the football with 16 rushing touchdowns, Christian?
Yet, it was surprising to see Bo Prabula run the football.
He almost has as many rushing touchdowns as he does passing touchdowns.
Good thing, when you got out of the half and worked your way into the third quarter, the game plan really changed. You were able to stop Bo. 15 carries, 110 yards, averaged 7 yards a carry, had a long of 22. Again, he was 2 of 3 at halftime throwing the football. Funny enough, Virginia said, all right, cool, watch this. NC State did try and make a couple of adjustments. Brought in those safeties rather than playing 10 or 15 yards, played at about 8 yards away from the line of scrimmage, and Bo Prabula goes 3 for 3 on the opening drive of the third quarter just to let them know that, hey, we can still throw the football too. Throws for 2 touchdowns, only goes 9 of 11 through the air for 155 yards, 14.1 yards per attempt, and threw for 2 touchdowns. But Virginia ran the ball 57 times for 258 yards, 4.5 a pop, and 2 touchdowns. Between that, C.J. Bailey being all out of sorts, despite being the biggest trash talker on the field in warmups, talking to the Virginia student section, telling them that they're wearing the wrong colors and that they need to be in red. A lot of people are very high on C.J. Bailey, and I think rightfully so. This is a story of loyalty. The guy that probably could have gone a lot of other places but decided to stay at the Wolfpack in year three after a pretty solid back half of the year in year two and a relatively frustrating year one. But 12 of 23, 84 yards, throws a pick, has a couple of fumbles as well. The Virginia defense, arguably the most impressive factor in this game, even when looking at this Virginia offense, it was the defense that gave them short fields many, many times, and Virginia just absolutely dominates at home in the first sellout, I believe, in that stadium since 2005.
I believe it. I mean, Virginia football hasn't had a ton, even in the Bronco Mendenhall era before Tony Elliott or anything before that. But look, I mean, when NC State's punter has 327 punt yards, I think that's more than total yards they have because you look at 76 rushing yards, C.J. Bailey. I would love to see the statistic outside of like the Army-Navy games. when the, like, how many, what percentage of games where the leading rusher for both teams is the quarterback?
Yeah.
I'd love to see if someone can do some digging on that statistic. Again, phone lines will be open all day. Text box is open. The Send Medicine text box wide open. But I'd love to know that. But when you have 92 passing yards, 76 rushing yards, basically you're holding into a 150, and you double that in punt yards, I think that's the story we need to be talking about, is this Virginia defense being able to just absolutely lock down. I mean, the longest play of the day, you have C.J. Bailey with a 13-yard carry. You had a 21-yard reception by Vander Ploeg. That's
fantastic tight end.
Fantastic
name, by the way.
Yes, Vander Ploeg.
Vander Ploeg, that wears number 88 and is the NC State tight end. That is a fantastic name.
And he had two catches for 25 yards, and the longest one was 21. That's just is it when Virginia also had multiple 40-plus yard plays,
mm-hmm.
had a 22-yard carry. Bo Prabula on one run had the longest play of the day between both teams, not including his two 50-yard bombs to Xavier Brown and Deshaun Martin. Frustrating if you're Dave Doran.
And wild to think that Virginia starts 1-0 in the ACC again in week zero. It's just a wild thought that is, but safe to say that Tony Elliott's found his quarterback, and he's found the system that works for him. You look at the team stats as well, and you look at the time of possession. We wouldn't have needed to dive into any of this if I were to read you two numbers in terms of something that doesn't mean as much as it used to in college football, and that's dominating the time of possession. But this is all that I need to tell you if you didn't watch it. Virginia had the football for 38 minutes and 3 seconds.
Of a 60-minute football
game. Of a 60-minute football game, Virginia had the football 38 minutes and 3 seconds. That means NC State had the football 21 minutes and 57 seconds.
Yeah, I mean, that can't happen if you're NC State. Ball control is such a great statistic, and it tells you who great teams are versus a fluky team where it's like, yeah, they're winning, but they've had the ball for, this many times. Like, once the game expands, what happens? Just, there's something about imposing your will on an opponent and controlling the clock that is just so impressive to see. And that's what Tony Elliott and this Virginia team is doing right now, Christian.
They got it with Bo Prabula. Again, you know him. You heard the name at Penn State. You heard the name at Missouri. I think you're hearing the name now in the ACC in Virginia as well. We will take a break. We will continue diving into some of these week zero games and some of the best games of the week and some of the ones that hurt me to still think about to this day. We'll dive into that. Continue on here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line right after this.
You're on the line with Christian Griffin and Trip Upton. Be a part of the show by calling 334-321-1390 or text us at 334-784-1685.
Back here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. Appreciate everybody for being here with us, continuing to break down some of the Week Zero games from this past weekend. Able to talk a little bit about North Carolina TCU, also Virginia and NC State. A game that we talked a lot about in the state of Alabama and how cool it was that a team from the state of Alabama was able to play in a game like this. Ultimately did not go in favor of the Gamecocks. Thought that maybe in the first quarter things were going to kind of work its way out, and I guess in the wrong way things did work its way out. North Dakota State, in its first game in the FBS, defends the Fargo Dome relatively well. They win it 33-7, and this is another game that you go and you look at some of the team stats and you go and you look at time of possession. North Dakota State had it for over 36 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, Nathan Hayes is a good quarterback. He doesn't do anything particularly insane, but he's going to be a guy you look out for on the G6 level. It's like, this could be one of the guys that is a good quarterback there. Miles Mitchell running the ball well for them as well. It's a tough environment to play up there. It's a P4 environment. I don't know if I've said that, but I think I believe that it is a, that the entire state, unless you're a fan of the Fighting Hawks, you go and support the Bison, which is awesome to see.
And maybe even more so this year.
Right. So they're always going to be packed out. I would not, depending on how big the venue, the Fargo Dome is, comparatively to some other stadiums, I would not be surprised if they are the attendance leader in the Mountain West this year.
Fargo Dome capacity is 18,700.
Doesn't sound like a lot.
There's not a upper deck of the Fargo Dome. Everything is just the lower bowl.
Yeah.
So it's basically, yeah, you take that upper deck and then just shrink it down. So it's just that one bowl, which obviously helps from the appearance of fan attendance, but still almost 20,000 for every single contest. Real quickly, looking at this Bison's schedule.
It's nothing crazy.
Fordham, at Air Force, at Sacramento State. Wyoming, at UNLV, Nevada, at New Mexico, home for UTEP, at Hawaii, home for UNI, and at San Jose State.
I think that's 9-3.
That could easily be 9-3 at the low.
Yeah. Looking at some of these stadiums for the Mountain West, I mean, you have Allegiant Stadium there. I mean, that's a big stadium, but they don't fill that out for UNLV. You have UTEP at the Sun Bowl, another stadium. They don't really fill it out a ton. You have Air Force's Falcon Stadium, good stadium. New Mexico's University Stadium, good stadium. War Memorial Stadium at Wyoming is good as well. But the Fargo Dome, the third smallest. Do you want to know what the two below it are? San Jose State and Hawaii's Clarence T.C. Ching Athletics Complex.
Yeah, that's the... Is it still under renovation?
I believe that is correct.
Yeah. Because the stadium itself is pretty sweet, but gosh, imagine being able to say, I'm going to go watch a college football game
in Hawaii.
In Honolulu.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Speaking of the Rainbow Warriors, I think it's time.
Yeah. Real quickly, I have no comments towards Eastern Michigan and Sac State other than the fact that Sacramento lost its first FBS game. Other than that, I paid attention to highlights. I will be completely honest. Other than looking at the gray fields, there was nothing else that...
Noah Kim's fine. Might be one of the a guy that denote in former Michigan State Spartan, I believe. So I think that he's been pretty decent. Yeah,
he has. I mean, he threw for 279 yards and two touchdowns, but just from the game itself. A game that was not it was more at least for my side of things. Stanford and Hawaii, and I don't think I have the need to apologize to the folks of Auburn and Opelika for telling you that Hawaii was going to win, if not at worst, cover this football game, because Micah Alejandro and Hawaii came out of the depths.
He threw for 50 pass attempts.
Oh, yeah, they don't run the football.
Well, I know that. Well, they had 22 carries. Devon Rice with 35 yards.
Sorry, they don't run it successfully.
It's the run and shoot.
It is very much just the veer and shoot, and we'll run it if it's third and one or maybe first and 10. But Alejandro, went 30 of 50, threw for 269 yards and two touchdowns. And, a lot of those completions came in the fourth quarter once desperation hit, because the Rainbow Warriors came out of the depths of you-know-what to all of a sudden realize, okay, it's desperation time. It's time to play football. It's time to actually run the correct routes, because, the amount of miscommunications in that Rainbow Warrior wide receiver room, and very unfortunate that Poeffel was not able to play the leading receiver for the Rainbow Warriors, because that connection between the two of them was pretty much the main reason, and one of the biggest reasons, if not just for Michael Alejandro himself, of why I thought Hawaii was going to win this football game. Hawaii comes back and takes the lead, and all they needed was a stop, and they couldn't get the stop, and all they needed was to score, or at worst, all they needed to do was not have a pick six or not have a scoop and score, and Hawaii covers this football game. But on the second play of the drive, Maka Alejandro gets strip sacked, and the defensive lineman picks it up. Fourth play of the drive, Maka Alejandro gets strip sacked, picked up by Stanford, and run into the end zone. Stanford wins. Stanford covers in the classic Van Pelt late Sunday night bad beats. It's week zero, and you have already seen one of probably the worst ones of the season.
Yeah. Good job for Micah Ford, the junior running back for Stanford. He's been there for 3 years, three touchdowns. Not a ton of yards, but you know, new era for Stanford, new head coach, and look, I think that Stanford is finally hoping, trying to get back to that way of like, what we need to do is we need to have a running back that's really, really good, a tough defense, and then a quarterback that just kind of, at worst. That's what Davis Warren is. I mean, he's good but not great. You have Micah Ford running the football, and then you have a good defense. That's kind of what you saw with like the David McCaffrey teams, the Bryce Love teams, and everything of that. After Andrew Luck on, of they can get you to 8-4. Can they do it in the ACC? Finally, they play a game on Friday against Miami at home.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my goodness! Imagine for the first.
You talk about fans being the lack of fans that were in Southern Cal. There were even less that were in Stanford. I mean, that stadium was more Hawaii fans than Stanford Cardinal fans. So
that's crazy.
Talk about the downfall of that program. Real quickly, USC wins 42-26. Jade Maiava went 25 of 29. Absolutely fantastic. 286 yards, two touchdowns. King Miller had 15 carries for 63 yards and a touchdown. But San Jose State, man, they figure out some offense in the fourth quarter, kind of when USC figures out what they want to do in terms of just saving guys for the fourth quarter. Didn't necessarily care about the cover. They knew they had the win in hand, but
yeah.
San Jose State scores 23 points in the final 15 minutes. Maybe there were a lot of people that cared about that from the standpoint of, what was it, 35 and a half or whatever the case was. It was kind of right around that line, but USC wins it in front of all 14 fans, which we have some audio that we'll play for you here in just a minute. But before we get to break, because we've run a little bit long, do want to talk a little bit about Florida State and about UNLV. Which one would you rather start with?
Let's start with Florida State.
Okay.
Because I think that's the team that I think the general college football fan was watching more. I think UNLV probably had some Auburn fans tuned in more because of the quarterback for the Running Rebs. But is everything okay with Ashton Daniels? I saw a lot of Florida State fans saying that he was not ready to be the quarterback there.
I mean, again, Auburn fans were watching this from the quarterback position, too.
I guess so true.
Daniels went 17 at 27, 202 yards. Again, the offensive line did not look good for Florida State. And, yeah, it did look very discombobulated. Again, 202 yards, a touchdown, an interception. You knew you could run the football. I don't think that's ever truly been the question, because you had Chroma 14 carries for 115 yards. And a touchdown. We also had Singleton for 42 yards. You had Quintavion Wisner, which is wild to think that he is at Florida State. You've heard that name for so long at Texas. He had only had 4 carries for 34 yards, and Ashton Daniels had 8 carries for 30 yards and a touchdown. They ran for 5.5 a carry, had 3 rushing touchdowns, but just very, very discombobulated, and the defense didn't look stellar. Again, New Mexico State, with Trey Hedden, who went 26 of 42, 272 yards, 2 touchdowns, and a pick. Couldn't run the football, but Florida State's defense couldn't stop the pass. Had 2 guys go over 75 yards, both of those with a touchdown. Again, 272 yards through the air. That could be a big-time problem when you face some of these pass-heavy offenses in the ACC.
Well, I will say, though, I think the final score was honestly a lot closer than it should have been. Like on paper, it was a lot bigger than this final score, because you look at, I think there's a graph by one of the graph websites that I really like. And
is it one of those, like, how badly
Yes, and I think Florida State had the second biggest win of the day.
Okay.
So I think that was a lot of just, like, look, short field and, like, 13 plays, 51 yards, interception for New Mexico State. You had 3 drives in the first quarter. And then so you immediately cut the scoring in half right there. Yes, Ashton does throw a bad pick, but at halftime you were up 17-7, and they scored a touchdown on a 9-play 75-yard drive. I think just it's a lot of New Mexico State milking clock, and Florida State has to kind of do the same thing. So it's a lower scoring game. When in actuality, when you look, they had like a 90-yard drive, a 64-yard drive in the fourth quarter, even though it was a 14-point game. I just think that this Florida State team is going to be different than what you're supposed to expect. It's going to be a team that's going to be ball control, run heavy,
defense can improve and they should improve. It's just really going to be a question of can that offense get second dimensional with a passing game with Ashton Daniels. I don't know, but the O-line's got to be the team that helps that out.
And the final game, again, quickly, I know we're way past our break here, but wanted to be able to dive into all of this in the first two segments. The nightcap, Memphis and UNLV, and gosh, did it start before the teams even ran out of the tunnel. Dan Mullen walking out with an Elvis impersonator
into
Las Vegas, and it was like, all right, this could go really good or really bad. And I started getting some texts again in that on the line in the Send Medicine text box about that in itself, where I was still tuned into the end of the Hawaii Stanford game, but did see plenty of clips in that. And how nice is it that the rest of the country got the full Jackson Arnold experience? The full Jackson Arnold experience. And I, from a person, again, I don't want to say well, but know him, know the family, have met plenty of times just outside of football, and fantastic. But you saw, man, Dan Mullen said that Auburn didn't use Jackson Arnold correctly, which I don't disagree with.
No, but I don't think anyone disagrees with that.
But then it was, man, look at this. He has confidence again in the pocket. Look at this. He's completed 11 straight passes. This is what the Jackson Arnold is supposed to be. This is what it's been all along. If you give him a competent offense, which he didn't have in Norman, he didn't have an offense in Auburn, but you now look at him in Las Vegas. Look at what he's able to do. That's a winner right there. And then the fourth quarter hits. And I got a text in the Send Medicine text box, which you can always be a part of at 334-321-1685, and it says, did you see Jackson Arnold in the fourth quarter against Memphis? He did the same thing that he always does when the game is on the line. He held the ball, and he took multiple sacks. And he took six of them on the night. And three of them were in the final drive, and everybody in America said, oh, I see now.
Yeah, a big zero in the fourth quarter when it comes to points. That second half, they led 14-7 at halftime, only score a touchdown, and it was out of the third quarter, effectively.
Again, if you're a box score viewer and you look at just the overall stats.
Had a 54-yard carry.
Yeah, Jackson Arnold went 25 of 37, 291 and two touchdowns. Also had 21 carries for 54 yards, only 2.6 yards per carry, and a touchdown. But yes, had a 54-yard run. But before that final drive, I believe he had 18 carries for like 82 yards. And that is just the full experience that Auburn fans see was, okay, wow, the receivers were hitting stride. And then it got to the point of get rid of the football. Oh my gosh. And that's exactly what UNLV suffered. A home loss to get the season started against the Memphis team that they were favored by 4.5, if not more, points. Memphis walks in to UNLV and pulls off the upset, 27-21. And now that Memphis team getting a little bit of respect that I think it deserves as well. 34 carries, 195 yards, and Marcus Stokes went 15-26, 223, and two touchdowns. Memphis able to get it done, and they may have just eliminated in week zero, arguably the favorite out of the G6 conference to make the college football playoff, out of the college football playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, four sacks on the last three drives of the game in which you get turned over on downs, punt, end of the game. Two of those coming on the last three play of the game. Not really great, especially when you look at this. You got to go to Hawaii next week. You have North Texas. Your signature win might have to be Cal if you're UNLV. And you basically have to hope that every other conference champ is at least two losses or didn't beat a P4 team.
Or you hope that it's just the fact of this team lost in week zero and then it figured everything out since then. It's the factor of the eye test of this team's playing better than anybody right now, to where those 11 wins almost have to outweigh that one loss to get the season started.
Sure, but I think I worry with, and again, I know we got to get a break, but if you could look at it, Memphis versus UNLV, Memphis wins the AAC, yet they lose a game in the American, they're going to get in over with a week zero loss. You got to hope if you're UNLV that you win the Mountain West and every other team loses multiple games at the G6 level.
Yeah, and then you got to pull off a couple of wins that you either probably shouldn't or ones that you definitely won't be favored to do so. But the full experience right there from both of the former Auburn quarterbacks. And so we'll take a break. We will come back. We will work our way to week one of college football and how there is a little bit of drama, a little bit of bulletin board material working its way through Lubbock, working its way through Clemson, South Carolina, and working its way through Austin, Texas. We'll be able to dive into that when we come back here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You're on the line, and we're just 30 minutes in. Now back to the studio with Christian Griffin and Trip Upton on ESPN 106.7.
Continuing on here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Working our way now to the present day. Why spend today in last Saturday when you can just work your way to now, and that's the best way to go about it. And some bulletin board material has worked its way throughout the world of college sports here this afternoon. We have Mr. Joey McGuire, who thankfully has not been a part of drama at all during the college football season. We have Marcel Reed calling out the Texas Longhorns back in April, I believe, but for some reason, now it's choosing to really, really circulate. And then we have Dabo Swinney, the head coach of the Clemson Tigers, the godfather of college football, and the guy that we called crazy for many years, did people in college football, and now you're starting to see everything that he said possibly being right about the future of not only life, but the future of college football in general. And so I want to be able to play a couple of these audios. We're going to start with what head coach Joey McGuire had to say about the attendance in Southern California on Saturday afternoon.
Not to take any shots, because I have a lot of respect for, USC and Lincoln Riley, but man, it's really awesome to be playing in Lubbock, Texas, knowing we're going to be playing in front of 60,000, and it's going to be warm. It's going to be every bit as warm as it was Saturday. The great thing is we got some really tough people at West Texas that love their football, and they're going to show up. And no matter what the weather's like, there's not going to be any excuse of why they're not going to be here for us.
If only they played each other. Would have been fun.
I mean, Joey McGuire and Texas Tech, they talk a lot about people they don't play. I mean, I'm just saying that as he doesn't talk about Baylor with the same energy. He don't talk about Kansas with the same energy. He don't talk about Utah with the same energy. But, I mean, he's right. He is. I mean, he's got a good fan base. Love him or hate him.
And I take that a little bit less from the smack standpoint, more so just the idea of
the comparison
and calling out another fan base and another head coach. But that one actually made me giggle because, again, he's not wrong. It's going to be hotter and more humid in West Texas.
I'd rather be in Los Angeles where it's like, yeah, it's going to be 80 degrees, but it doesn't feel like 95 like it will in Lubbock.
It's a good point.
You sit under a palm tree instead of being in the desert.
Yeah.
Go get in the
ocean.
There weren't
too many palm trees, but again, it was 90 degrees, Paul. We can't go watch a top 15 team in college football because it's hot, and there's the beach, and there's a Dodgers game that we can go to.
And there's live music venues, Christian.
Priorities, baby. Continuing on, now a quarterback conversation in Texas A&M and Marcel Reed, who, again, back in April, had some comments to USA Today. And, again, I don't know why this is just now really starting to circulate, but it's Texas A&M quarterback, again, Marcel Reed, says, quote, "We don't like Texas. I don't like Texas. You got to hate Texas." And he called out their trademark colors as well. He said, quote, "I just hate the color orange. The colors just look so ugly. Everywhere you go in Austin, you see that color orange. Burnt orange? Who even likes that color? Texas, it's the rival, bro. You have to hate them." And so I've seen a lot of stuff on his social media now, like responding to stuff like that, playing music. And he ends it with, "It sucks that we've lost to them twice." Which, that statement in itself is almost the only thing that Texas fans need to use. But he says, they're coming here this year, so they're going to have to pay. I've got something for them for sure. And so, excited for that matchup. Again, I have Marcel Reed going to New York. So,
What else are you supposed to say?
He better play. Again, yeah.
What else are you supposed to say? Like, if you ask any Alabama player about Auburn, you ask any Auburn player about Alabama, they're going to say the same things. Oh, I don't like orange. Oh, I don't like crimson. The only people that are upset at this are people that wear diapers with the Texas Longhorn on them. Like, yeah. That's all it is.
I do just think it's funny, though, that it's like, this is when it circulates now. And, yeah, it felt like it was one of those lob questions of like, okay, here's your answer. But I did find it funny that he said, yeah, it sucks we've lost to him twice. And it's like, ooh. There goes the entire argument for everything.
I mean,
you can hate
him without disrespecting them. He's respecting them, but also hating them. So yes. I think it's, again, valid. Well, there's nothing in that statement I have a problem with.
Nope, not at all. But there's another one that has a little bit of comedy to it and didn't necessarily mean it this way. And he says that he didn't mean it this way. But talking about the state of college football, and funny enough, the opponent that Clemson gets to see in week one. Here's Coach Dabo Swinney earlier this morning.
Oh, it doesn't frustrate me. I rarely am I at a loss for words, but Chapel, I'm at kind of a loss of words. I would just say it's kind of embarrassing. I mean, honestly, it's just embarrassing that's where we are. And I don't blame the kids and people trying to take advantage of the system. I just think it's embarrassing where we are with college football. And we've been there for a while, so it didn't. I just keep my energy and my focus on and my energy on the things that I control and the things that matter, and that's these kids here and our team. But, you know, all that outside stuff, I mean, we just kind of, no pun intended, we just stay in our lane, you know, here at Clemson. Try to. Every now and then somebody will ram into us, but we try to just kind of handle our business here. But it's embarrassing. I mean, it really is. You know, we have no rules. There's no governance. I mean, it's a joke. There's zero rules. And when you enforce rules, somebody just goes and finds a judge to say, no, you can't enforce that rule. So, I mean, never did I think I'd be living in an era like this, but that's where we are. And, you know, hopefully eventually there'll be some different things coming down the pipe. But all I can tell you is, man, we have great kids here. We have great kids. We've got great people here, and we try to just kind of stay focused on Clemson and how we do things.
I think that's pretty comical. No pun intended. We stay in our own lane. Oh, if only they had to play each other this season. It would have been a little bit more dramatic. Oh, wait. They play each other on Saturday. We got to get to break here. Wrap up hour number one when we come back.
You are on the line with Christian Griffin and Trip Upton on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and on the Radio Alabama app.
Very quickly, wrapping up hour number one here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Appreciate everybody for being here with us so far. Hour number two, going to be a whole lot of fun. Again, the phone lines stay open. The Send Medicine text box stay open as well. We talk about our confidence and our concerns for Auburn football in week one as they head their way to Atlanta to take on Baylor, where we did get confirmation. I don't think that this comes as too much of a surprise, but the Aflac kickoff game did release the jerseys, and Auburn wearing their traditional home blues, the white pants, the navy face mask. And so going the all-traditional home look for their home game in Atlanta.
Yeah, just, I mean, that's what it should be. I haven't seen what Baylor's going to wear, but I assume it'll be...
They're not wearing their charcoals this year, so...
It'll probably be their white. Like
they can't hype that up this year.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if it's color on color, but they'll probably wear their white jerseys.
Again, hour number two, confidence versus concern for Auburn football in week one. Also, a question from the text box that we want to be able to answer as well. Again, you can be a part of it all afternoon. 334-321-1390 is the phone line in the Send Medicine text box. 334-7 841-OTL. Hour number two coming up.
The following is an Auburn Network production. You
are on the line on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text in at 334-784-1685. The boys are bringing you all the action on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. When it comes to the Tigers, the SEC, and the hottest topics in sports, this is where you want to be.
We talk biggest concerns and the biggest confidence for Auburn football taking on Baylor in Atlanta here in hour number two.
Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, straight from the ESPN 106.7 studio, here's Christian Griffin and Tripp Upton.
Hour number one in the books. We welcome you into hour number two here on this Tuesday afternoon. Another hot one here in the Auburn Opelika area, but the sun is shining, minimal clouds in the sky, beginning to feel, just kidding, it feels nothing like fall here, even though we've hit September 1st, which, Tripp, according to you, you said today was the first day of the late 2020s?
Yes. So according to Encyclopedia Britannica's X account, that today is the first official day of the late 2020s, because if you divide it up between the early 2020s, the mid 2020s, and the late 2020s, this is the day that officially is the tipping point where you're 66.67 whatever percent done with the decade.
Wow. So yeah, that ended, the mid 2020s ended
yesterday.
Yesterday, August 31st of 2020.
And started in like 2023.
Man. That tells me that it's the late 2020s. That's the start of Auburn football. Maybe not the earlies and the mid, but starting this year, starting this third, we play football in 4 days, and really excited to see this Auburn Tiger team take the field. A lot of that conversation here in hour number two. But as always, if you missed any of hour number one, you can always go back and check it out over at our podcast center on ESPNAU.com. In hour number one, we talked some of the college football drama, played some of the audio, not only from Joey McGuire, basically calling out the USC fan base and Lincoln Riley, and I guess indirectly Lincoln Riley, because he says he didn't mean any disrespect, but basically talking about how he is very thankful that he coaches in West Texas for the people that actually care and love about college football, because he says it'll be hot there too, but he'll still have 70,000 cheering the Red Raiders on strong. And so I got to play that, got to listen to, or got to rather read, Marcel Reed's comments about the Texas Longhorns that I don't necessarily, again, have a problem with. Tripp, I don't think you do either, but nope. More so just the idea that that was said in August, and now the Texas fans have gotten a hold of it and have started running with it, and it's like, okay, well, you better have a perfect game now. There better not be a single mistake, otherwise Texas is going to win. It's three meetings with Texas A&M since being in the Southeastern Conference. And then Dabo Swinney says, no pun intended, but we like to stay in our lane. And whether you choose to capitalize the word lane or you choose to lowercase the word lane, a little bit comical on that side of things. Just talking about college football being embarrassing for where we're at. And it's an embarrassment that this is the problems that we're trying to solve in between week zero and week one. Yesterday, we got to talk a lot about how LSU is basically being threatened by whether that's the SEC or the individuals of it, of being removed from the SEC. And so just a wild concept on that side of things, but Clemson and LSU set to play on Saturday night. And so how funny is it that was the word that was, or that was the sentence that was said, how it was chose to be said, but no way that turns into a bulletin board for either team going into week one here this weekend. We also dissected all of the week zero games, got our thoughts out there from the appetizer of college football. And again, so if you missed any of it, you can always go back and check it out over at our podcast center at ESPNAU.com.
And in hour number two, we're going to take a look at this week one game and talk about our confidence and concern for each phase of football from offense to defense to special teams. Christian and I are going to dive through it and work our way through there. If you want to give your opinion or what you're most concerned about or excited about for this week one game, phone lines are wide open the entire rest of the show. 334-321-1390 is the phone line number. And the Send Medicine text box, which is open, as Christian has said, 24/7, is open at 334-784-1685. The text box is brought to you by Send Medicine. There you get VIP medical care with direct access to your personal physician. With 20-plus years of emergency room experience, Dr. Eric Sen is bringing personalized, access-driven healthcare to the Plains. Become a member today by visiting senmedicine.com, S-E-N-N-Medicine.com. Again, that phone line number, three or text box number 334-784-1OTL. And some other piece of business, once we get off the air here about 4 o'clock, head over to The Graduate in Auburn, head up to the War Eagle Supper Club and go visit with Bill Cameron, as well as I think Jason Caldwell will be joining him today on the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Come join them at War Eagle Supper Club at The Graduate. Did you know, Christian, that the War Eagle Supper Club had a brunch on Saturdays and Sundays?
I did not.
And this fall, every home game, they will have brunch on Fridays as well.
Boom.
So if you get into town early, you're saying, okay, what do? We know we've got the RV here, or we're at a hotel. Where do we need to go? You need to go enjoy brunch on the rooftop at the War Eagle Supper Club at The Graduate in downtown Auburn. I was there this weekend with the folks. My parents came down, and we went up there and enjoyed a great meal. And you can come out there today. They'll have food. They'll have drinks, or they'll be open there. And I'll probably be heading there after this. Go visit. Go hang out. Make sure everything's good. Supervise. You know, making sure they know how to use the equipment and all that stuff. They do. But come out and say hello.
Trip's buying.
I don't know about all that.
That's the last thing that I heard. That's on the bottom of that read right there.
Is it?
It says Trip Upton's buying. So first
I
one out
now.
There to go introduce yourself. Tell him
sure.
Hi. First one is on Trip here this evening. But
yeah.
Again, we appreciate everybody for being here with us, whether it's ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, that Radio Alabama app. Before we dive into the football side of things, did want to give a shout-out to Auburn baseball as Blake Burkhalter is
yes.
called up by the Braves, set to make his Major League debut. The Braves heading up to heading up to Washington to take on the Nationals, and so
yes,
really cool on that side of things for Auburn baseball, getting another guy into the pros, and for the Braves, it makes it more just that much more special. And man, I still remember the save that he had in Corvallis, and I believe they posted about that. The Auburn account did with Andy's call saying that Auburn's going to Omaha, and that game, that contest, man, that series was so fun being able to watch that, and that was kind of the first time you saw Auburn really take that jump for the baseball program, at least in terms of what the postseason is going to look like and will continue to look like. And since that year has looked like on the Plains, and the idea that Auburn hasn't had to travel over the last handful of years has been a problem. And so, again, Auburn baseball continuing to be on the rise, as is all of the guys that have made their way from this past year as well as years past, continuing to work their way up from the minor league levels. I know that Chris Rempert, Eric Guevara both hit their first minor league home runs not too long ago. And so, again, continuing to give their big-time shout-outs as well. But, yeah, Blake Burkhalter called up for the Braves, set to make his debut coming up for Atlanta, which is really, really cool to see a guy like that, and even more so when it's kind of in, you know, Auburn's Braves country.
It's Braves country. Don't let the folks that try to tell you that we need teams in Birmingham or Nashville or Charlotte try to break up Braves country. Braves country, in my mind, goes from the Texas-Louisiana border all the way east, and then you get up to about the Virginia-North Carolina border. You get Tennessee, Kentucky kind of border territory, and then I think it goes down through the panhandle, about basically Jacksonville South, might be Tampa Bay Rays territory, if they even want to call it that. But that is Auburn is Braves country, and it always means so much more when you get to see a player from your favorite college team play for your favorite professional team.
Oh, yeah.
I know you have the Braves polo on right now. I was out at the Truist Park this weekend. Big Braves fans here, as I know that a lot of our listeners are as well. And so that just means it means more to have an Auburn Tiger playing for the Atlanta Braves. It just makes it so much easier to root for them.
It definitely does. Definitely does. We make our way to the Send Medicine text box at 334-784-1685. Again, 784-1OTL. Got a text in between hour one and hour two talking about just all of the drama that goes on in college football. But it says, what's more likely? At least one SEC team refuses to play LSU, or Baylor wins by double digits this weekend. Your thoughts on that. What is more likely to happen? Again, one SEC team refuses to play LSU this season, or Baylor wins and beats Auburn in Atlanta by double digits.
Let's take a look at LSU's football schedule, because I think you would have to see what teams would most likely back out. I don't think that you're going to see Ole Miss back out. You know,
how funny would that be?
That'd be the most loser move ever for Pete Golding, unfortunately. If you're like, yeah, we're not going to play you guys.
That would be the most, yeah.
You know how much money the city of Oxford and legitimately the state of Mississippi would lose? Because you know people are traveling all over the country. College game day is going to be there. That's the hottest ticket of the season. I don't think X&M is going to cancel, but wouldn't surprise me. McNeese, I mean, is not a SEC team. At Kentucky, no. I don't think that a team that LSU travels to would cancel that game, because you don't want to deny the gate money. It's going to be a team that has to go to Baton Rouge.
That's a good point. Because my thought was, yeah, like maybe a Kentucky or maybe a Mississippi State could be that team. Again, not that this has any evidence or that this has, you know, a crumble trail or whatever the case may be. It's not like, oh, we're pre-firing a call here that Mississippi State's not going to play LSU. But again, just in the sake of this conversation.
It is. I think that November 14th matchup, if Texas is rolling, and it's like,
would that also be the excuse of if Texas is 9-1,
yeah,
or something, or they're 8-1, or they don't want to possibly go to 8-2.
That's exact, and it's the player that is such a Steve Sarkisian thing to do.
We're gonna declare this a no contest because we're not necessarily gonna gain anything if we lose. Or if we win, rather, but you lose everything if you lose. And
I mean,
we'll point the finger back at you and say, yeah, we don't want to play them because
Alabama's not going to do it. Mississippi State, I just think that it depends where you are in the season. If you're like, man, Levy's out, we don't want to play this game, like the locker room's already opting out, maybe. But I just feel like that'd be such a Sark thing to do, deny LSU Senior Day. Because they'd play two road games to close out the season in Knoxville and in Fayetteville.
But not do it until, like, Thursday.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be the most Sark thing ever. Like, gross. But, I mean, if you're being honest, what I would think between – I feel like Baylor's got a better chance of winning by 10. I know that that's crazy. I know that is a hot take given the market that we're in. And, you know, being at all – and I don't think that's going to – neither of these things are going to happen. But I just see a world, and we'll talk a little bit more about it as we go for our confidence and concern. I mean, there's a world where there's a shootout game that Baylor leads by 7, then Auburn turns the ball over, forces a field goal or something, where it's like, it's 10 points, but it really doesn't feel like 10 points. It's like, feels like one score, back and forth ball game that you score again late to put the game away.
Yeah, that would probably be my answer, just in terms of, again, which is more likely, at least one SEC team refuses to play LSU or Baylor wins by double digits. I'd love to know the overall value of a team basically flipping the market and making it a 17.5 point change in Atlanta. That would be...
Yeah, that'd be very interesting. But again,
I would say that is more likely than a team in the SEC legitimately opting out of their game against LSU or refusing to play them, because if it was LSU's cause, then they'd sit there and go, okay, we want the win then, because we're willing to play and we're not going to rule this a no contest. You can rule it a forfeit if you don't want to, and you know, we're going to be rewarded the win. I'm sure that would be the mindset that they choose to take. But how wild of a thought is it that that's where we're at in college football? Because again, we talked about it yesterday of whether or not you make the complaint of, okay, it's literally only two players. It's a backup tight end, and it's a defensive lineman. And I know that Lane Kiffin had his comments earlier today at the press, or maybe yesterday, that was talking about, yeah, I had a meeting with all the players and asked them what they want to do, because I know that we've been practicing as a team. So what do you guys want to do? And he basically said that all the players said, if they give us a chance to win football games, then bring them in. And I don't know how much I truly believe of a statement like that, but
I mean,
the idea that we're now at the point of a team threatening, again, that's far-fetched from actually going out and doing it, but saying that we're not going to play LSU or we're threatening to kick the Tigers out of the conference because of what they're choosing to do, wild to think that it's September 1st, college football has already begun, and A, that those statements are being said regardless, B, the fact that they're being said now. It's a bit of a wild thought, but appreciate the question. Again, it makes it a very big talking point, and again, it's what we absolutely love being able to discuss. Again, give us any of your thoughts, any of your concerns, especially as we work our way towards what we're about to after the break. Again, the text box always open at 334-784-1685. The phone line's open as well, 334-321-1390. Give us a call. Give us your thoughts on the concerns and the confidence meter, where they sit right now. But if there's one thing that concerns you, but one thing that gives you confidence for all three phases of the football, we're going to dive into that as Auburn takes on Baylor in Atlanta at 2:30 on Saturday afternoon.
You're on the line with Christian Griffin and Tripp Upton. Be a part of the show by calling 334-321-1390 or text us at 334-784-1685.
Back here in hour number two of the Tuesday edition of On the Line. He is Tripp Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. I appreciate everybody for being here with us. And something that we've been wanting to do for quite some time, and now the fact that we get to do it for week one of college football brings a whole lot of energy, a whole lot of excitement into the studio, because we get to dive into our C versus our C, our confidence versus our concern for Auburn football, not of the 2026 season, but more so specifically diving into week one of Auburn and Baylor. We'll spend time talking about the offensive side of the football. We'll then flip to the defensive side of the football and finish up with the special teams, because Alex Golish, in his opening statements yesterday afternoon, talked a lot about how in the week zero games, you saw what good versus bad special teams were able to kind of highlight real specific parts of the football game, whether that's just simply field goals, whether that is executing punts, whether that is creating good returns on punts, creating good kickoff returns, things that you don't truly pay too much attention to unless they seem to go really, really good or really, really bad. But it felt as if there were stars highlighted next to the special teams for a lot of these teams in week zero. And so definitely want to be able to hit on that, especially with the frustrations that have been with the special teams units over the last handful of years. But again, with a lot of change, a lot of confidence works its way, and the health works its way through even more confidence on that side of the football. But we will start offensively for the Auburn Tigers, and we will obviously start with our confidence, and then we'll bring our concern, unless you think it's better to start with the concern, but then
let's start
work
positive.
That way into almost turn the negative into a positive.
No, let's start it positive. Do you want to go first?
Show me what you got.
My confidence is this rushing attack, and I think that's because you can do so much different stuff with it, where if they are keying in on Jeremiah Cobb, Omar Mabson has such a different skill set that he's going to be able to do well, or Bryson Washington has a different skill set, or Byron Brown has such a different skill set where maybe they can stop one rusher. They're not going to stop four or five guys, and I know that Alex Golish has talked about how they want to run the heck out of the football. Given what Baylor was doing last year against the run, I just think that Auburn will be able to run the ball as much as they'd like to. I would not be surprised if they have over 250 to 300 rushing yards tonight or on Saturday afternoon.
Wow. My confidence for this Auburn offense is diving into the game plan and the adjustments. You hear all about this coaching staff and what they're willing to do on the offensive side of the football. You know that they want to go fast, but when you're looking at this offense as a whole, I get to the point of it feels as if there should be no reason whatsoever that the offense shouldn't there should be confidence that regardless of what Baylor puts to them on the defensive side of the football, the offense should work. Whether right. that is with the just true zone reads, the RPOs, the quarterback keepers, or if that does mean the passing game, I would be very, very – I would be shocked if Baylor sits in a too high shell, just a little bit of a very soft, high safeties, not allowing anything outside the hashes, the deep balls. We're going to force – this Auburn team, as they did last year, to run 5-6 yards a pop, but to do that 12-13 times in a single drive and march down the field, Auburn and Freeze swallowed their pride and was able to do that, and we thought there was some change. Alex Golish and staff has no problems. They have no problems whatsoever if their offense looked like Virginia's did on Saturday, where it was, okay, at halftime, Byron Brown is 2 of 3. Yet, Jeremiah Cobb is dominating. You have Omar Mabson, who was, in fact, listed in the depth chart as running back 2, which, again, I know that there is so many comments on Omar Mabson and what he continues to do. His upcoming leading into his sophomore season, when it should be his freshman season of college football, but Mabson was listed as the running back 2. But between those two guys and then what Byron Brown wants to do in the run game as well, I would not be surprised whatsoever if it wanted to look that way, but I'd also be very surprised if Baylor allowed Auburn's offense to do the exact same thing that they did last year. That being said, my confidence comes with the game plan, the adjustments that this staff and these players are able to make, right? So you're going to be able to see what that change looks like 2 or 3 drives into the contest, where whatever Baylor throws at you, I am confident that this offense will be able to move the football down the field. My concern, working onto that side of things, is going to be the speed of the game. And that's not necessarily a G5 versus P4 or whatever the case may be type of conversation. It's just more of there's nothing that can simulate or imitate a real college football game with another team and other colors on the other sideline. Once you get into game speed, there is nothing like it. I mean, ever you see growing up, shout out dad if you're listening, but his biggest pet peeve was in middle school or an early high school basketball practice or whatever, and you're seeing the layup lines and everybody goes half speed. All of a sudden in the game time, everything speeds up, and now because you didn't train at the full potential, you didn't train at the full speed, things speed up for you that much more, right?
Right.
Same thing in baseball. If you're sitting there hitting off of machines throwing 75, all of a sudden you get into a game and there's a guy throwing 92, it's a little bit different than you were if you were at least trying to simulate to the best of your ability. Football, I think, works that same route of it also is just being week 0, right? Or week 1. It's the first time that you're on a football field against a team that is not yours. And so the speed of the game I would list as my biggest quote-unquote concern. Yet that being said, the way that this staff has been so meticulous in going about their business day in and day out, I put that as a very minor concern, which I think is a good problem to have with the amount of confidence that's in this offensive unit.
No, I agree with you, and I think that a big part of the adjustment is the fact that last year you look at what Auburn was coming out of the Baylor game, where Hugh Freeze talked about, I had to swallow my pride as a play caller despite rushing for however many yards they ran it for all over that Baylor defense.
Mm-hmm.
And you're coming out of there saying, I had to swallow my pride for making an adjustment. But you won the football game. It's not like you just say, yeah, we just swallow our pride and do this. Like, you won the football game handily. I think Alex Golish is not going to have that problem this year, and I think that is going to be such a big plus of making that adjustment of, okay, if we got to throw the ball 100 times a game, go full air raid, let's do it. If we got to go wing T and just run the ball, power, trap, end around every single play, that's going to work. If it wins, it wins. That's all that matters.
So
to
be
Coach
it.
Golish.
And why would you apologize about winning a football game?
I know.
That's
Shocker.
Why this game plan, the adjustments that are going to be made in game, I am very, very confident in what I'm going to see.
Yes, real quickly, mine is going to be the pass protection versus the blitz.
Sure.
And, you know, it's not Ron Roberts. That's who I thought it was at first, but it's a new defensive coordinator who was at Kansas State last year. And I think that what they're going to want to do is send bodies at Byron Brown, send bodies in the pass rush where he's having to make decisions a lot quicker instead of being the biggest guy out in the field most of the time when he was at USF. He's now just he's still the dude, but he's still a dude among other dudes. And I worry a little bit on how if that process gets sped up with power four level pass rushers attacking this offensive line, if he can make decisions quicker. I will say, I think that's going to be really interesting to see what his internal clock looks like, where instead of stepping in, throwing a ball, it's, all right, let me get outside and let's get hit Pater. He's one of the best quarterbacks in the country at doing that.
Yeah, making it to where you said it, your internal clock doesn't speed up, which goes exactly off of my point of the speed of the game, making it to where you've already practiced at the fastest you possibly can, to where once you get out into the game, it feels as if you're in a little bit of a slow motion. That's where that confidence continues to build. We've talked offense. Let's talk defense and special teams when we come back.
Halfway through hour number two, you're on the line with Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
Thirty more minutes here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. We talked about the offense and the confidence versus the concerns that there may be for Auburn football in week one against Baylor. Working our way to the defensive side of the football. And if you have thoughts on this, feel free. The phone lines are open. Give us a call at 334-321-1390. The Send Medicine text box always open as well at 334-784-1685. Again, 784-1OTL. And Tripp, we'll start with you again, my friends, for the offensive or for the Auburn defensive side of the football. Where does your confidence sit with them right now?
I think this is the play calling from Coach DJ Durkin, knowing his unit. It's a very experienced unit with Xavier Atkins coming back, Jared Smith coming back, Champ Anthony, Eric Winters, New Boy Fegans, and just a host of good transfers. The defense as a whole isn't really what I'm confident about in this game, but I think it's the play calling from Coach Durkin, where you get to a third and short, a third and medium, a second and long. It doesn't matter the situation. I fully believe that he's confident in the fact that he's scouted this team and he knows what's coming. I know it's a week one. It's hard to say, oh, you've scouted this team, but Coach Durkin is going to be able to put the best guys on the field and know, okay, we need to send the house here. We need to drop in coverage here. We need to go to a cloud shell here. We need to go to a cover four here. He's going to know what to do, and that's going to be so invaluable to this game that you're not worried about a first-time play caller on defense. You're not worried about a first-time being an Auburn Tiger. Coach Durkin knows this unit. They're going to play well.
Yeah, and Dirk talked about it yesterday, too. Again, we got to go to the Alex Golish press conference for week one, but we also got to hear from Joel Gordon as well as Coach DJ Durkin, and he talked about how there's not a lot of times in college football, especially now, that you have so many returners on one side of the football, yet he feels as if he's very confident in what those guys are going to do. He's also very confident in the expectations that not only the coaches have for these players, talking about guys like Elijah Melendez, talking about guys like Bryce Dees, talking about guys like Deshaun Womack, and how, again, not only the coaches have high expectations for them, but they have high expectations for themselves, right? Those players have very high expectations. And talking about the leadership that is continuing to be a work in progress. Gilish told us a lot that he feels that could be one of the things that he says that's the main thing that makes him lose sleep, is he wants it to be a player-led program, and how he feels as if there are guys offensively and defensively that have come into that role of, whether that's a vocal leader, whether that is, Golish used the word earning the right, or the saying of earning the right to speak up and challenge the team, challenge the defense, challenge the offense a lot. And Durkin talked about how, again, some of these guys are at that point of being those vocal leaders. He talked about Elijah Melendez being a guy that's been more vocal. He talked about a guy like Bryce Deese being a little bit more vocal than he has been in the past. I saw a quote yesterday, I believe, from Champ Anthony. I think it was Ferg that asked him the question about, you know, what does it give you confidence for on the defensive side of the football when there is a completely new scheme almost for this Baylor team, a new quarterback, a new offensive game plan. And he just talked about the guys that are on that side of the football. He talked about just what it looks like to play in this system yet again for Coach Durkin, and then answer the question about DJ Lagway and his dual threat ability when he's healthy. And one of the best quotes that you'll hear is Champ basically said, yeah, we got 17 on our side of the football, so if their quarterback breaks contain, I know that he's going to go and get him. Talking about Xavier Atkins being probably the best spy in all of college football. So to be able to say, yeah, we got 17 on our side of the football. Well, there's a 17 on offense as well, but talking about Xavier Atkins and his playmaking ability is just off the charts. Again, we saw that especially in the back half of the season. And so that is my confidence right now for this defense, talking about the run game and then keeping DJ Lagway contained. Lagway, again, last year wasn't necessarily known for running just because of the health issues and the injuries, and it was a little bit more of, we're going to trust you in the pocket. And although you're entering a system that is much more pass heavy for this Baylor team, I think that you are going to see them try and use DJ Lagway's legs as a playmaking ability, whether that is in the quarterback run game truly, or if that's going to be just scrambling. But I think the ability for Xavier Atkins to be that guy that's right there, whether that's in that spy spot, whether that's just sitting there as kind of that Mike linebacker that everybody's going to know where 17 is. And again, that run game, your linebackers getting downhill is going to be so, so fun to watch for this defense. My one concern would be the Baylor intermediate passing game. I don't necessarily have the true fear of the complete downfield threat for Baylor. Again, the plenty of new receivers. You don't have Michael Trigg, who torched Auburn last year with over 100 receiving yards. I will trust our corners and our safeties, although they're young, on islands if they need to get to that spot. But what is that intermediate passing game going to look like if the linebackers are trying to get downhill? Can Auburn tackle in space to keep a 6-yard hitch, to keep a 5-yard slant at 5 yards rather than, okay, catch is made at the 45-yard line, and instead of 3rd and 3, it becomes 1st and 10. Or, God forbid, breaks a tackle, all of a sudden he's out racing the safety to the pylon, and instead of it being 3rd and 3, it turns into a 55-yard touchdown pass when the entire route was made and the entire play was made by the receiver. And so that's where my one concern sits, just in terms of if you can keep Lagway contained, what can that intermediate passing game look like in terms of Auburn's defense?
I think that's a valid one. My concern is if they get punched in the mouth, who's going to lead and speak up for this team? If, let's say, Baylor comes out with the football first, they score a touchdown, Auburn has to punt, Baylor drives the length of the field and scores a touchdown. If they're down 14-0, who's going to be there in the huddle among the players? Who's going to, when they get to the sideline and go, guys, we've got to adjust. They're killing us through the air. They're killing us on the ground. If that is to happen, who's going to lead and speak up? We've heard Coach Golish in practice and in these media availabilities, especially this week, talk about, man, one thing that I worry about is who's going to be the player leaders on this team. They're not willing to name permanent captains. They're going to go week by week and see who steps up. That's something that concerns me a little bit, because you need those on-the-field leaders. I think Xavier Atkins is one, but who on the defensive line? Who's that Eugene Asante that's going to stand up? Who's that Derek Hall that's going to stand up and go, guys, we've got to make a play. We've got to listen to what Coach Durkin is telling us. Communicate. That's what I need to see from this defense. With such a fresh defense, yes, you have a ton of returners. You need a lot of guys. You have your Andre Jordans and your Shamar Arnauds in the secondary. You have some new guys up front like Cody Sigler, and you got some new guys in the linebacker room, or young guys like Elijah Melendez and Bryce Deese. Who's going to be that guy that's going to chew somebody out or talk to somebody on the sideline and get the guys fired up. Hey, we've got offense needs us to go get a stop. If that comes down to it, ideally you'd like them to be firing from the gate and play with their hair on fire. But if what happens when it all goes wrong, who's the guy on the sideline hyping up his guys? That's my big concern for this Auburn defense. They have the talent, but do they have the leadership if things don't go exactly how they need to go? We saw it last year. Offensively, we didn't see it last year. There was nobody in that locker room that was that guy for Auburn. Who's going to be the guy this year for defense that's going to get on them and be that guy?
Yeah, especially, again, when you work your way to the sideline, it's one thing to have a coach there telling you what to do. But for anybody that's played any sort of sports, it just means a little bit more coming from one of your brothers. You tend to listen to it a little bit more. You tend to take it, I don't want to say more seriously, but you take it a little bit more with going out and making that change rather than, yeah, I know we need to be in this rather than this. I was caught in a busted coverage, whatever the case may be. Again, I think that is a really good one. I got a text in the Send Medicine text box, which, again, you can always be a part of at 334-784-1685. It says, playing devil's advocate here, not that I disagree, but we've had our share of leaders, including Eugene Asante, but it didn't give us too many wins, especially, again, talking about the defensive side of the football. Can't say that I disagree with something like that, but it felt as if it was my response to that would be, it felt as if those leaders were speaking onto deaf ears.
Yes.
And it didn't feel as if it was the leaders speaking to a group of individuals that were playing together as a team. It was much more of the, yeah, we'll let him say whatever he wants to say, and, you know, he'll go and be that leader, whatever the case may be, but it fell on guys that didn't necessarily care. I don't want to say didn't care, but didn't do the things needed to go and win Monday through Friday to where the score and the result translated on Saturday.
And I think you also look at the coaches for that as well, where you look at when Eugene Asante was here, Ron Roberts, there's a reason he only lasted 1 year. Just he didn't like the leadership style and you didn't like the idea there. You look at where Derek Hall with the Harsin era, there was not a lot of leadership there from the head coach, from the defensive staff. I think Coach Durkin has changed that, and you saw that last season where he was that leader. You had Xavier Atkins be that leader. And
that's why there's so many returners on this side of the football that are playing for Dirk.
Right, and you look at those kind of guys where you had an experienced group that you didn't need as much leadership because everyone knew their role, and the defensive coordinator was that guy as well where he's going to blow you up on the sideline if you mess something up and it's your fault, but he's then going to bring you back up and tell you, here's what you need to do. If Alex Golish practiced what he is preaching about having a player-led organization and a player-led unit, you're going to need those guys, especially with the amount of youth in the secondary, the amount of turnover in the secondary, the amount of turnover at that linebacker room, and the youth in that linebacker room, and the amount of turnover up front. Xavier Atkins is the man. Yes, you have a lot of returners, but it's a lot of guys that were the two-deep guy or the three-deep guy. Now they're 1-1s. They've got to be able to go and have a leader. And I think that DJ Durkin brings that from the coaching side to go, hey, listen to who's going to be the leader. And if you have a vocal leader, like I can only imagine what Derek Hall or Eugene Asante would be on this team this year with a guy like DJ Durkin supporting them. I think it'd be phenomenal.
Working our way to the special team side of things before we take our final break. Confidence and concerns for Auburn's special teams in 2026.
I would say my confidence is the continuity. Looking at like you return a kicker. I know Alex has had the health issues, but he's still a veteran on this team. You return Hudson Cock, the punter. I believe the long snapper as well as the holder are both returners. That's going to make such a big difference when you know your process. You know exactly, okay, Alex likes the ball here, spun with the laces at this exact angle, put down in this way, tilted this direction. That continuity matters in special teams. My concern, though, is this return game. I worry a little bit about, can they be a big factor and a big help rather than a big detriment? I think in years past, you've seen them be a detriment where you're losing a possession on a fumbled kickoff or there's a penalty on the kickoff, which we saw so much. Can they clean that up and make it so that Auburn, at very worst, is starting at the 25, if not further down the field, or they don't get an offensive drive at all because you go down and score a touchdown, not because you just fumbled the kickoff or punt?
Coach Jacob Bronowski is bringing a lot to this Auburn special teams unit. He was the special teams coordinator as well as the tight ends coach at Pitt during the 2024 and 2025 season. According to 24/7, he was named the special teams coordinator of the year in 2023 while at Miami of Ohio and was selected for the AFCA 35 Under 35 Coaches Leadership Institute. And so you talk about a guy who's had success on that side of the football and in that side of, again, it's something that goes by the wayside in terms of importance, right? When you're looking at field goals being made, you don't really – you obviously notice them, but you notice them a lot more when they're missed. Whether that's good punts, bad punts, if that's good kicks, bad kicks, good kick returns, bad kick returns, that has been a big-time concern for this Auburn team. Just over the last handful of years, Bronowski hoping to make some of those changes. When I look at the confidence, I, again, kind of where you're at right now, talking about the field goal unit, if Alex McPherson can stay healthy as we believe that he is right now, I mean, being able to watch him in practice is uber impressive. I mean, everybody else runs their way outside to the football field, and it's almost like, you know, I'll stay inside, and A, because of the AC, but also because I want to watch Alex McPherson bang field goals from the 45-yard line and sit there and watch him go halfway up the netting from 55 yards. I mean, it's absolutely insane to see that. I mean, this guy has the opportunity to be the best kicker in college football again, just based off of what we saw a couple of years ago when he was healthy. So that field goal unit is definitely one that brings a whole lot of confidence for what I'm expected to see for Auburn in 2026, but especially again in year one. And the field position battle is going to be where I put right now just my concern. I think that could be a very easy one to fix. It helps itself too if Alex McPherson is going to be your kickoff specialist, because more times than not, you don't even have the option to return the football because it goes out of the end zone. And that makes things a whole lot easier to force teams to start at the 25 versus a return where Auburn hasn't necessarily been great. And again, one of the things that kind of goes by the wayside, but a decent return gets you out to the 34, 35-yard line. You're essentially already a first down plus from where you would have been if it was a touchback. It's a big start to the field. All of a sudden, you get two more first downs, you're almost in field goal range, rather than, again, being backed up at the 25. Could change the play call a little bit on third and eight if you get to that point. So the field position battle, both on the return game as well as in the kicking game, is my biggest concern. Yet that being said, I think that that can be the easiest one to be corrected in terms of, could easily work its way into a confidence factor working its way from week two on.
Yeah, I think that the return game is such a big part of what special teams can do. I mean, I said it, you said it, and just being able to, even if you only get 10 more yards or a couple more yards on one kickoff, that could be the difference between you getting in the field goal range and making a field goal versus punting.
I mean, when you're looking at it, if your average starting field position is the 25-yard line versus the 34, again, it's 9 yards. That's basically first and one, if you will, from the standpoint of where it would have been if you were forcing touchbacks. And then if you start at the 25, think about the way that that continues to shift from the game within the game of, okay, we're going to pin them deep. Then all of a sudden, Auburn's offense has to be a little bit more passive because you're starting with the football inside the 10-yard line after a punt.
I mean, look at last year.
And yes, exactly, to where it felt as if so many times Auburn's defense was running onto the field with the opposing team starting at midfield, all because of the field position game, the game within the game of – okay, it doesn't necessarily matter right now, but two or three possessions down the road where both defenses are making plays, every single time that starting field position begins to shift its way closer and closer to midfield for the other team.
Right, especially given the fact that this defense is going to be, I think, game-ready, mid-season form by week one. I know you have a lot of youth, but I think just with DJ Durkin and how he has these guys practicing, it's going to be a lot better than further ahead than the offense will be. So given the fact that if you can help out the offense as much as possible by helping that field position battle, where you're getting punts further if you're punting, you're getting field goals when necessary, and you're getting good returns and not allowing good returns, the defense is going to get the stop one way or the other. It's, did the offense get the ball back at the 35 or the 10-yard line?
Simple game, really.
Just math.
Score more points. Don't give up points. And start with the football at better spots.
Look, if Hudson Cock never takes the field because Auburn's offense scores every drive, I don't think that that's a complaint at all. I love Hudson, you know, but you don't remember 2019 LSU's punter, do you? You remember the quarterback. You remember the running backs and the wide receivers. You don't remember the punter. So, because they scored a lot of points, he didn't have to do a lot of work. That's what Auburn would like to do. But if you got a punt, they've got a good one.
Confidence versus concerns for Auburn football in week one. This will be something fun that we can work our way just about every single week, talking about what we saw the previous week versus what we're going to see this upcoming week. And so how our confidence is and concerns can be either answered or highlighted even more so working their way into week two. But we will take our final break here on this Tuesday afternoon. We'll come back, talk to you about what you're going to hear tomorrow on the Wednesday edition of On the Line with our high school coverage, as well as a special guest in there as well. We wrap up the show right after this.
You are on the line with Christian Griffin and Trip Upton on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up the Tuesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. A really good show today. A lot of coverage, a lot of content, a lot of conversations. Everything you could ask for as we continue to wrap up talking season for the Auburn Tigers. Got to dive into some of the Week Zero games, the college football drama that is in Lubbock, Texas, possibly in Clemson, South Carolina, in Aggieland in Austin, Texas, and again, with Dabo Swinney's comments about staying in your own lane. Here in Hour 2, talked about the confidence versus the concerns for the Auburn Tigers in Week 1. And hey, tomorrow's show going to be a lot of the same, a lot more coverage starting with the high school side of things. Boom. Coach Jacob Osment, Coach Keith Etheridge of the Lee Scott Warriors and the Auburn High Tigers. Interviews with those guys. We have Jordan Hill of Dogs 24-7 joining us. Also, we bring back a guy that we talked to in Tampa, Florida, Mr. David Epps, the CEO of the Peach Bowl and head of the AFLAC kickoff game, to give us any sort of updates and continue to count you down to that AFLAC kickoff game between the Auburn Tigers and the Baylor Bears. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. We appreciate everybody for being here with us. And sports are so much better with an opinion, whether you love them, whether you hate them. We're back tomorrow to talk all about them, and we hope you'll be there to join us.